The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat Podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Every week, your Cincinnati.com beat writers, Paul Danner Jr. and
Fletcher Page,
take you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium. We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by 50 West Brewing Company. I am Paul Danner Jr., your Inquirer Bengals beat writer, with my partner Fletcher Page. Week two, first full week for you. It feels like okay, you're like officially here now when you have the first full week.
Yeah, it's like day six for me.
Yeah.
I've checked off a lot of firsts.
Hey, first adversarial Marvin Lewis press conference, check.
I can't believe how terribly awesome that was. Because I wanted to ease myself in. Like, I wanted to see how you guys handle things. And we're going through one thing to the other. And Marv was,
just uninterested in happy fun time on Monday.
And I was sitting there thinking, this is every Monday afternoon.
Yeah. It's why we look so disheveled and beaten down as a group. You know, you come in, you've got like nice clothes and cool hair and like a big smile all the time, you know, and like, man, I feel like I seem to have more joy in my life than these people. I wonder why. And then that happened and you're like, oh, this is why it's a problem.
Gonna have to double up on my coffee intake, which I gotta apologize because I officially accepted this job on Thursday.
Yeah.
The Thursday of the Ravens game.
Yes.
And since that time, you know, Mixon and Price and all these injuries happened.
Yes. AJ Green.
AJ Green.
Also notable.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the loss.
Yeah.
I got a lot of tweets on Sunday about how this was all my fault.
Yeah. Well, you'll be blamed for many things. This is just the first of many.
Well, I accept my share in the responsibility of these matters.
Yeah, I mean, if you weren't writing all this negative crap about John Ross, he would have gone for those balls instead of quitting.
Well, I very quickly went from trying to figure out who was going to be the backup center, which I thought was a pretty, you know, easy storyline to track.
Yeah.
A lot of positivity with Clint, to John Ross quitting on deep balls.
On deep balls. And not catching them as well, also relevant. We're going to get to all that, including giving you some quality audio of the Marvin press conference from Monday, which was just vintage. It took one loss to kind of just shove Happy Marv into a closet and bring out our old friend. Hello, darkness, my old friend. That's pretty much how it ended up. So I can't wait to bring you. Just I'm not gonna overdo it because I don't want you to end up beaten down and disheveled and hurt emotionally. Have the scarring that we get. I don't want that to happen. So I won't do it all. But you got to get a good feel for it. And we'll debate on what that means. We'll talk about John Ross. We'll talk about the Ryan Glasgow torn ACL, what that means for the defensive line. We've got some third down stuff, as the Bengals have been a complete train wreck on third downs. This year, we're going to dive a little bit into that. Terrell Austin spoke with us, and we try to figure out what the hell is going on there, and some stuff on Dre and Quez and traveling cornerbacks and things like that. PFF with Austin Gale. Some interesting numbers that he turned out. And then we've got your three questions. We'll see if we can dig some skeletons out of Fletcher's closet here. I want some people that know you to show up out of nowhere on Twitter and be like, you know, in high school, this guy, he did a lot of meth.
Well, I did go to a county school.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot to do.
You're from a county.
That's right.
Which is, that's when you know that you're from a small town in Georgia. When you don't, you don't even say you're from the town. You're from, which county was it?
Towns.
Towns.
Towns. I'm from where the Appalachian Trail either starts or begins, depending on how you're approaching it.
How you're approaching it. All right. So let's dive a little bit into, I'm just going to open with a little bit of it so people can, and then we'll talk about reaction. Here's like, I'm going to give you a good 2 to 3 minutes of what we were dealing with on Monday and Marvin Lewis's general just not feeling us. In the press conference.
Marvin, what could John have done maybe better on the two interceptions to help Andy out?
Well, he's got to do a better job of always just, you know, doing the best job. We got to finish the play. Everybody's got to protect the quarterback. You know, whether it's the guys up front, whether it's the backs, whether it's the receivers, whoever it may be, they always have to, you know, protect the quarterback.
Well, that interception and...
We're not going to talk any more about going any further. Okay. Thank you.
Do you guys expect to lose Glasgow for the year?
I don't know that.
There was a report that said he tore his ACL. He's on crutches.
When someone tells me that, he's on crutches. When someone tells me that, then we'll better answer that and we make that move. We'll see.
He has played well.
He's done a nice job.
Did you feel like he took a pretty big step this year?
Well, I think, you know, Ryan did a nice job yesterday. He was doing a good job in there.
Carolina did with the running game. Was it their execution, defense being kind of not guessing maybe a little too much combination? What do you think?
Well, we weren't guessing. It was just a combination of both. We got to play better. We got to play better.
Right. Not gaps.
Got to play better.
Well, stuff like that, is missed tackles the thing that you come away most frustrated with on days like that?
Well, we had a couple missed tackles, but that wasn't the majority of it. We got to play better. I don't.
Was the thought process, the final play of the game, going for the Hail Mary there? It was only going to be one play, you're two scores down. Is there any concern there?
You want us to walk off the field?
I mean,
come on.
You don't think that's, does injury risk even play into it there?
Well, I thought Andy did, you know, what he's supposed to do, and that's try to go get the touchdown. Anything else? Okay.
Ooh. Icy. Just a little, I'm always, and it's actually interesting to talk about. I want to dive into the reaction here now. That was your first, that was my millionth Marvin press conference. And honestly, sometimes they're like that. Often they're not. You know, sometimes it's more condescension. Sometimes it's actually story time and there's a good mood and there's some joking. Sometimes it's just nothing but backhands. This one was just, it was sort of, I think he just came in not wanting anything to do with us, and I don't know if it was feeling like too much negativity came out of the first loss or the whole John Ross thing being an issue, but it from the get-go there was just a feeling of I'm not going to turn this into some media deal.
Well, I think he came in with a strategy pretty clearly. He knew he was going to get the John Ross thing. His first answer, he did sort of let us know, like, you know, John's got to,
right,
he's got to compete more on those balls. But then he went real general, and then he had to shut it down once, because you know the specifics are going to come out, like especially that second interception Andy threw to John,
right,
was so bad,
yeah,
and Marvin went to shut it down
immediately, quick. And I honestly thought about firing again, coming back. It was about, I think it ended up being about 8 minutes. And after he said no more questions on this, my first thought was, oh, I think there might be. I think I might come back around after everybody gets everything in. And knowing that he might just be like, I thought I said no more questions, but maybe sometimes you can still get an answer and it will set something off or say something. But inevitably, it went so sideways that I was just like, he's not warm up. So, cause sometimes you can warm up a little bit.
Right.
He just came in with animosity, but then get going on other stuff. But clearly, that was not the direction that he planned on taking this. And I think, you wrote about this in the story about John, is that this was the opposite of what happened last year. And I think that's where, to me, that's the root of all of this, is last year he said all that stuff about John Ross, and then he was, John Ross is in the doghouse. And it beat John down. Like, Jim had the unbelievable story about John's first year and all the stuff that he mentally went through and even dealing with potential depression and all that stuff and not wanting to take him there and because not wanting to look like he's throwing him under the bus or that he's putting him in his doghouse or whatever and knowing that if it goes on that it could look like that. So say your piece, shut it down, and not make this the John Ross sucks show.
Yeah, but if I just can't imagine this happening. If you're John Ross, it's happening. It happened the first time. You understand how the harsh criticism you receive from your coach and the fans, and to have it happen again, I don't.
Maybe that's who you are as a player, and that, I mean, it's a massive problem. But maybe that's who you are as a player.
It's an unacceptable problem.
Well, obviously, and I don't think that they are accepting it. Honestly, if you ask me today, and the people that we rely on for information and the people that we talk to, yeah, everybody, what you saw on TV and on the replay and what we documented in your story, there's no other piece to that story. You can't there, and there, and I don't know that there even could be. I don't think there's no defending it. But that's what happened, and he got yanked. What's kind of gotten overlooked in this is the last six plays of the game, they sat him on the bench and shipped Cody Core out there. So I think there's a chance you could see that on Sunday. The AJ Green status thing makes it more challenging.
Right.
If they don't have AJ Green, like, they need John Ross. They've never needed him more to be a guy if AJ Green's out and stretch the field, especially against the banged up Atlanta safeties. You got to be testing those guys.
And to Marvin's point, though, he said you got to protect your quarterback. If you're a wide receiver, like, what more could you want than to be down by a score? You're facing a long down and distance, and he makes a throw to let his guy go make a play.
It's John Ross time.
And John's not even running anymore, and he never turns his head.
See, here's what I was trying to think. If you were trying to defense any of it, A, you didn't think he was going to throw it to you. You still should be just sprinting to try to run yourself open.
Right.
B, like, you're not even looking for the ball. You should at least be turning for a second to try to see the ball. And not, I mean, to just be completely lost and just jogging into space on second and 20 when you are, by all accounts, as far as we know, the primary target on that play. I just don't understand. I don't understand it. And it's exacerbated. Everything is exacerbated, as things can be. Lap goes off on the radio call. What are you doing, John Ross? What are you about? That brings it even more into the consciousness, to the point that Monday afternoon on Willie's show on 700 WLW, which I think that spot is normally reserved for, like, actual, like, leaders and councilmen and governors and Joe Dieters. But it was Lap, and they played his call, and he wasn't backing down. And that reflects, what everybody saw and what the organization saw. And this is what got you in this spot last year, and you're doing it again. And I think that is just the maddening aspect of it. And why Marvin came in so hot, because
right.
This had been an issue that was on the radio call, and so that he was aware of that.
Well, hey, that you lose the game, you cost your quarterback an interception and a possession.
Potentially two, depending on how you judge the first one. As far as what that route should have been and everything else. I mean, and then you drop a ball.
But and now, the two, though, is the second or third question asked to Tyler Boyd after his career day is about John Ross.
Yeah.
And then Andy Dalton's asked about John Ross. And then Marvin Lewis was in a bad mood about John Ross. And now it's Tuesday, and we're talking about John Ross. And all you had to do was sprint.
Yes. And you're exactly right. Try hard. Know what you're supposed to be doing, having an understanding. And, you know, but this is what it's been. And this is why I think you're getting a little bit more insight into what was going on last year. Yes, there's the flashes of brilliance, and there's the speed and what he can be, and he can run himself open. Too many times you don't catch it. Too many times you don't know what's going on. And when you don't know what's going on, or you just don't try, things like interceptions happen, like what happened in the preseason game against Chicago. And, you know, like what we've seen that when he had the drop, there's been multiple drops that those could be easily have been picked. Balls that go up in the air, you know, and it's just the flashes of what you can do. They start to not pay off when the other stuff is there and you become unreliable and your quarterback can't trust you. Can Andy Dalton trust to throw it at John Ross right now?
No shot.
And if you can't, then you can't be out there. And you don't need to know any more about what this offense could, because an already good offense could look like, than watch Atlanta the last 2 weeks when Calvin Ridley become a dude.
That's what John Ross is supposed to be.
Supposed to be.
Yep.
That is what he's supposed to be. So that you can have that other guy, and now you're like, Julio, I don't know, Calvin Ridley just caught 3 touchdowns. So what are you going to do? We will know more as the week goes along, or maybe we won't. Maybe they'll really try to hide this. So what do you do? Well, here, let's walk through the options. Let's say you're going to ding John Ross somehow. You can deactivate him. So you would have AJ, whatever he ends up being. Let's play it under the thought that AJ's not going. No, you deactivate AJ Green and John Ross, and you have Tyler Boyd, Cody Core, Josh Malone, Alex Erickson. You know, I would have no problem seeing more run for Alex Erickson, who really played his butt off in the preseason. Looks like he's taking steps as a receiver. Play Boyd on the outside and Erickson in the slot. But you love what Boyd does in the slot. You hate to take that away from him, but maybe that's what you got to do. Auden Tate? You have no deep ball with Auden Tate. He's too slow. But he's got great hands. He showed a lot in that respect. You could certainly now bring him in and create some red zone opportunities at least. But you don't want to play in a box. And he limits you.
This scenario is a nightmare to me because you're out. You're missing Green, Ross, and Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the guys that make the plays. He's
supposed to be carrying you.
Right. I don't think you can deactivate
Cody Core. I mean, I just feel like we've seen enough of Cody Core to know he's not a receiver. Really. I mean, and that's fine that he's got some speed. He can stretch the field for you, and maybe he'll make a play or two.
Yeah, down the punt at the two. He did what he was supposed to do.
I got no problem with him on special teams. Yeah. But we've seen enough of preseasons and some games of Cody Core. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm believing that Cody Core can be any kind of answer for you. So what do you do? To me, I think it's probably a rotation. Maybe you rotate him with Cody Core. But Josh Malone, he should be a guy that you could say, all right, well, Josh Malone, he could come in. He was a fourth-round pick, and he showed some things in camp and preseason. But he hasn't shown well whenever he's gotten a ton of opportunity. And he had an interception that was basically his fault on Sunday, too.
Yeah, he's the only one that John Ross is cutting out or has given a break to. Because you did ask about – you asked Marvin about Malone, too,
and
right?
And he said you got to catch the ball or else you get deflections. And those things, as Andy Dalton said after the game, they rarely hit the ground. And that's not a secret.
Right.
And so who do you trust? Who do you love?
I don't think it's about trust now. It's who do you have to go with?
Yeah, right.
Who are you stuck with?
Right now, they need A.J. Green to be healthy. Because then I think you go with Green and Boyd, and you can mix in Cody Core, Alex Erickson, depending on your play. Or I have no problem with more 3 tight end stuff because that has been very good. Their tight ends have all played well. CJ Uzama has taken a big step this year. Eifert looks really healthy. Croft is still doing his thing, and it makes them real versatile when they put those guys out there. Helps you in the run game. Maybe that's it. Or maybe you just say, all right, John, let's put that one behind us and run hard. Know the plays. Help your quarterback. Interesting to see what his playing time looks like on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, the degree of difficulty it is most of the time for Andy and AJ to hook up, like that 31-yard pass where he taps both feet in, that that was incredible.
Incredible.
And John, all John has to do is just sprint.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Is run a play out.
Or even if he, you know, he was the primary target on that play, but he still has a job to do if the ball's not coming his way, which is occupy defenders.
Even AJ Green on that play that he made that insane catch, even AJ Green has to be thinking, I don't know how a ball could get thrown to me here.
Right.
But yet he's sprinting it out, and Andy's like, well, I'm gonna give AJ a chance. The same way he said, I'll give John a chance, and AJ makes an insane gives a chance to make a play for him. Man, for a preseason and camp that started with so much hope and excitement about him to just start so – and even to score a touchdown in the first game, it was like, okay, he didn't make much other impact, but that was a really nice play.
Mm-hmm.
And now for to be in this spot already, man, that's a guy that needs to have himself a game, and I don't know if he's going to get the opportunity to. All right, let's I feel like I got too worked up about that.
So pretty good.
Why am I so worked up about that?
Hey, we belabored it.
Yeah. We definitely – I mean, that's 20-plus minutes of really getting after that. I think that maybe a little much. Did we go – we didn't go too far. Yeah. Let's talk about some other things that are problematic. So Ryan Glasgow goes down. It is a torn ACL. I think we probably suspected that when you saw his reaction and the card immediately coming out.
Yep.
And he heard the pop and all that stuff. You know, that's that. You never want to hear pop and burn.
Yeah.
Which is what Ryan described what happened. Both of his parents are orthopedic surgeons, by the way, which is crazy. He tore a pec at Michigan, and his mom did the surgery, and he came back early in full strength.
That's incredible.
So he was weighing what he wanted to do because, you know, a lot of guys have had success with the Bengals doing the surgery, but, you know, he knows a lot about this type of thing, and he said his dad may even do the surgery.
Wow, my mom's a teacher, and she taught me how to read.
And look at you.
Then look at me now.
As far as I can tell, you can read.
That's right.
I can't really confirm yet. I haven't watched you read anything, but I think you have some comprehension.
A skim.
Yeah.
No, but the football's such a cruel mother because he's playing lights
best
out.
Best game of his career.
Career. And then he goes down.
Yeah. And really, he was one that if you listen to the BBP regularly, we were talking about throughout camp, like, man, he looks a lot better. He is really disruptive. And it was really nice to know that the fall off from Geno to whoever's spelling him was far less. I mean, it's always going to be a fall from Geno. But Geno is really good, and he needs his off snaps, though. Like, that's part of him.
Right.
But Ryan was really producing. I mean, he looked like a guy who was – you felt maybe the biggest jump of anybody that was in this sophomore season from that heralded 17 draft class. He might have taken the biggest jump of anybody and really like it. And so to lose him, yeah, that is tough. I'm not sure that they're going to fill that spot. Josh Tupou came in. He's like 345 pounds of Samoan. I don't know if he's a three-technique answer necessarily. Hubbard, Willis have moved in there. Michael Johnson will probably be back, I'm going to guess. So you have some options there. Andrew Brown is on the practice squad, your fifth-round pick. So you can look at maybe activating him. But if you don't think Andrew Brown is going to make your 46, there's no reason to bring him up, just to bring him up, pay him, and then have him not even play because you need that spot next week when Vontaze Burfict comes back. And maybe that would just potentially clear that, and you don't have to get rid of anybody in your linebacker room.
Right.
So we'll see how that plays out. My gut right now says they don't make any move. Yeah. I think they just put him on IR in exchange for Burfict's return next week. Have you had 50 West yet?
No.
Not yet?
Not yet.
You're a beer guy.
I do enjoy a few pops.
Yeah. I mean, was the word snob used about your... Are you a beer snob?
No, I will enjoy a Miller Lite. or three. But I get down to some pale ales. Yeah. I like IPAs. I'm not a big fan of stouts.
Okay, fair. 50 West... Coast to Coast is like pretty much my favorite beer.
Gotcha.
I think you would. We're gonna get back. We need to do a live show again soon. So if you're listening to this and you want to come down to a live show, shout out at Bobby Slattery #OptimisticBobby, and let them know when you want to come down and that you're interested. And we need to get one line back up. We're gonna do one soon. Because I need to get down there and drink while working.
It helps.
It's a perk. It's a perk. Well, because now we do Beyond the Stripes in the studio. Well, before we did it in bars, and it was actually encouraged that we at least have a beer.
Yeah, loosen up.
Even for show, so you can have the pint glass with the logo of the place on it and all that stuff. And you can't just sit it up there. I mean,
yeah,
everyone will know you're just faking it if it sits there full.
Like Nick Saban. with his Coca-Cola bottle.
Yeah, right. So we can't do that.
No.
So we need to get you down to the Production Works Coast to Coast. Their Doom pedal is ridiculous. They've always got so much good stuff. So, and if you have time, get down there. Go on Sundays, man. They got all the TVs, got the ticket, but you know the Bengals games are on. You won't see Bobby there on home game Sundays though, because he will be holding his stuffed cats with his son in the section near the world's greatest burger. And now they have 50 West inside Paul Brown Stadium, which is huge. So anyway, get a chance to get down there. Go check it out. Let's talk a little bit about defense. So we spoke with Terrell Austin on Monday as well. And, you know, credit him. It's on me. This is all my fault. You know, what a good coach should do. Not throw your players under the bus, which we've seen other coaches do quite often, other coordinators do quite often around this place. So I'll credit Terrell, you know, the real – called it a stinker. I like using stinker in the story, by the way. That was a good lead. Anytime you can just say – just use that word. Mm-hmm. You know, underused.
And I saw you came back with the word stench in your next – paragraph.
You notice that?
That's a veteran play.
You notice that? Yeah, I try to keep it real like that. Show off a little parallel construction and vocabulary. You know, everything's connected, Fletcher. Every sentence is connected in some way, shape, and form.
I'll tell you what's connected. The third down is what happens.
Look at you.
Is what happens on first and second down.
Look at you. You ready to talk about their third down problem? Can I run?
I want you to just rattle through all the things that you told me off before we started this thing, because you were passionate about.
When I find a nugget.
This is a whole box of nuggets.
Dude, I keep digging.
This is a 20 piece.
I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm one of those dudes in the mind where, you know, like in the movies where they scrape and they see the one little speck. Yep. And then everyone comes over with their like shovels and stuff and just starts going crazy. Oh my God, we found the gold. Like this, what, the secret of Curly's gold? This is like City Slickers 2, right? That's what this was.
I came into the newsroom, you had a pickaxe out.
And I found it in the third down. Look, this is what happens, because you can tie so many of the problems to this. So they're dead last in the league in third downs. That's like the little nugget that you see. That's the glimmer, and you call everyone over with their pickaxes. So what does this mean? Well, 32nd, it's terrible, obviously. They have had more third downs they've had to stop than anybody else in the league. Three more than anybody else. Obviously, you don't stop anybody, there's going to be more third downs. That's no secret. They have had to go through more plays. They're on pace to go through more plays defensively. Like 1,200 some, far and away more than any year in the Marvin era. And this is a problem, because last year they ran 150 more plays on defense than they did on offense. Now, I don't know how much you know about football, But 150 plays more on defense makes it much harder to score and win games than it does if you ran 150 more plays on offense. That's football 101 right there. You like that?
Knowledge.
Knowledge. So all of this is happening, right? Because they cannot get stops on third down. But it's all connected, like you said, because they also, you'll be not shocked to find, if you look at the average distance to go on those third downs, shortest in the league. 5.24, average third and 5.24. So that's why it's the highest conversion rate, and that's why they've given up the most, and that's why they're running way too many plays on defense, and that's why guys are getting gassed, and that's why the offense can't get on the field enough, and that's why you lose games. It all goes back to the one little glimmer. The one little glimmer of, oh, man, they stink on third down. It's kind of a root of all evil thing. We talked to Terrell about it. He's not going to divulge his secrets as to how he thinks he's going to fix it and what's going wrong, obviously. But it was, you know, there was some – he touched on it. Let's bring some of Terrell Austin, and then also we want to get into the corners because I know what you're all saying. It's third and Dre! That's what everybody says, and that's fair. He has been thrown on a lot, but I think it's interesting when you really look at the numbers. So let's talk a little bit about third downs, Dre, Quez, and traveling cornerbacks with Bengals DC Terrell Austin.
Obviously, you know, you guys haven't done as well as you like on third downs through three games. Where do you start with approaching that? Is there something that you feel like there's ways to attack fixing that, or...
Yeah, believe it or not, I thought we were really close to fixing it this week, and I think we're really close to getting it done. And there were some bang bang plays there that were just you know, a hair short or a hair a little bit inside or outside of where we should be, and I think we'll have an opportunity to fix that. I think we'll be better next week. I just, you know, it's like anything. It's once you figure out after the first couple how they're trying to attack you, then you got to be able to adjust and work that way. And so I felt good about the fact that in the second half, first half we weren't very, you know, I think they were 4 of 6 or something like that in the first half. And then in the second half, I don't know, they weren't as sharp in there. And we had another fourth down stop, which I think is good. Shows our guys are, you know, they'll buckle up and do some good things. But we just got to continue to work to clean it up and be better. And my goal is that each week we get better at it. And those will, we start making those stops, I think we got a shot.
Is that a matter of stuff that you're learning how to scheme up for guys and what works for them in within this? Or is it just simple stuff like just getting home to the quarterback or covering tighter? Or is it that simple?
Well, I think a little bit of it is as we get into these game situations, what guys feel comfortable with and what they – where they can excel on some things that they can do coverage-wise and how much they can handle coverage-wise and do. I think the plan's in place for us to do well, to do better than we have been, is what I'll say. And then we've got to just kind of put it all together. And I think we're just, you know, it doesn't take a whole bunch of guys to mess up. It just takes maybe, you know, one guy's out of position here, one guy's out of position here. And if you have a good quarterback, they find that. And I think that's what happened yesterday. Because when I watched the third downs, I mean, we had, for the most part, we were right on guys. It's tight coverage all the way around. And then, you know, he finds the one little window that's there. And, you know, I got to give him credit. But I think our guys competed well. They played hard. And they executed, you know, what we were trying to do to the best of their ability. And we just got to make sure we do better.
Did you have your corners travel when you were at Detroit?
I did.
Side to side?
I did.
Is that something that you thought about here?
Not at this particular time. No, I haven't. I haven't thought about it in terms of matching and doing different things that way. If I feel at some point that's necessary, then obviously we'll do it if we think it's in the best interest of our team.
I mean, Dre's been getting targeted a lot. On some of those, you talked about the tight coverage, but it looked like he was playing a little bit softer on
some things were based on how the coverage got called and what the call was. So that is not all on. Well, he's off. It's just some of the stuff the coverage tells him to be off. And like I said, he did a good job of finding where that weak spot was, because, you know, based on what we had seen, that's not where we expected the ball to go.
How do you feel like Dre's handled all the attention that he's seen this year?
He's fine. He comes to work every day, competes. He knows he's like all of us. We're just trying to get better and be better next week and help us win this week, because we all know it's week to week. And you don't know when your number's going to be called, when you got to make a play, and I'm sure he's going to make a lot of plays to help us here. I got all the confidence in the world in him.
Do you like, you know, Quez plays in the slot, and it's a whole different game when you're in there compared to outside. Do you like having Quez just only playing the slot, so he's focused on that, rather than maybe getting some run playing outside and rotating type of thing? Or is...
Yeah, I think the way most games are going now, and I know last week was a little bit different because I think he only played about 38 snaps, but he's usually going to be up over 50, 60 snaps because of the amount of three-wide football that we're playing. So I like him in there because that is a unique area, and you need the reps because you're really a hybrid. You're part linebacker, part corner, and so he does it really well. You just got to. So I don't see any situation. I mean, he's obviously our next corner. If something would happen to a guy outside, he'd move outside probably, and we'd find somebody else inside. But I like where he is right there.
Did anything stick out to you about that, hearing what Terrell had to say on Monday?
Are we back live?
Sorry. You have a tone.
I do.
Where I know you're live, and then... That was more of your to the point tone.
Yeah, we'll do.
Yes, we're live. You'll get adjusted. Don't worry. We'll get you adjusted to how this works.
I'm still getting up to speed, making my reads.
Yeah. But no, did anything stick out to you though?
I did think that it was he knew. I assumed that he knew questions about Dre would come, and I did. I like the way he stood up for Dre to try to explain, like, hey, you don't know what we're calling or what he's reading off of in terms of the coverage of the call, because it is really easy to pile on Dre right now.
It's noticeable. I mean, it's team's game plan, and understandable. So he's the second most targeted corner in the NFL. He's been thrown at 28 times via PFF. And that makes sense, because him and William have been out in coverage. They're both in the top six. Most snaps out in coverage, going back to what we said earlier about not getting off the field on third downs. But William has been thrown at 16 times and Dre 28. People don't want to throw the other way,
right?
So they throw that way. I mean, and that's why he's so noticeable. But he's only given up 13 receptions in those 28 targets. If you look at the most targeted players of the top 15, all but two of them have allowed a catch percentage of well over 50%, if not well over 50%. So Dre actually, as performance, he's actually been pretty average to above average if you look at whatever you want to look at, snaps per target or whatever. I mean, as far as catches percentage allowed, all that stuff. And he hasn't caught enough, but those are still PBUs, even though he has dropped interceptions. So you look at all that and you're saying it's just more noticeable, because that is the clear way that teams are choosing to attack the Bengals, is to try to go after Dre. And it is a lot on third downs.
And pushing it forward this weekend, I think, means a lot to him. He played with Julio. He is in the brotherhood with Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, the Alabama boys.
Yeah, he knows Muhammad.
Yeah, Mo, obviously, who played here. And
we know Atlanta's going to be throwing a lot.
Yeah, that's who they are. It's throw down field.
It's the total opposite of last week.
The exact opposite of last week, which I think Terrell Austin's pretty happy about. Right. I don't think he wants to see anything that looks like what they saw last week. But, yeah, this is kind of a game for William and Dre and Quez. This is for them, because it's Julio, Calvin Ridley, and Mo, and that's what they want it to be. And it's probably going to be a shootout. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I find it very interesting. Terrell saying he has traveled number one corners before, and so the thought is, well, you're going to travel William with Julio.
But he's not.
He's not. And, you know, I talked to Dre about that, and he was, like, asking if he was comfortable with traveling. He's like, well, you only do that if you have a significant difference in your corners. So he knows, I mean, Dre is very confident in himself.
Has to be.
He thinks he's on his way to a Pro Bowl year. And that's how corners need to think. Yeah. It's not, he's not there yet. There's no doubt he's not there yet.
But he's not as bad as the Twitter.
No, it's it really, you when you really act, it's just so obvious because there's so many plays, because teams are clearly targeting him and going after him. But if you really look in the big picture, it's not as bad. And I'm not.
You said average.
I'm not. Yeah, he's more. He's been an average corner. If you look at, you know, those that play regularly, the 100, it's like 111 qualify essentially, and he's in the 50s and 60s as far as performance.
Yeah, he's in the middle because he's talking about the Pro Bowl,
mm-hmm.
and Twitter's got third and Dre.
Yes,
and it's somewhere. It's a little bit. It's in the middle.
It's more in the middle. Yeah, exactly. Everybody has their view on things, and I think people will be surprised to see that. But yeah, so don't expect to see William following Julio Jones around. And if you do, then that means we got lied to, and a coach would not lie to us.
Never.
Does not happen. They're very truthful. So that's where that stands. Interested to see how that plays out this weekend as well. All right, we just rattled off a bunch of PFF stuff, so perfect time to bring in Austin Gale, our man from PFF, to talk about some of the other numbers that he saw coming out of Sunday's game against Carolina, and a little taste of Atlanta's analytics. So here is Austin Gale from Pro Football Focus.
All right, now it's time again. We welcome in our good friends over at Pro Football Focus. That means talking to Austin Gale, our man over at PFF and over the Rhine. Austin, what's going on?
Doing good, man. I appreciate you having me on. It's a busy week. I can't believe we're in the swing of things, but I'm excited.
Yeah, we are. We're in the swing of things. We've got our weekly rotation is on, so we know when it's BBP time, it's time to talk to PFF. And about what's going down deep in the numbers. You know, the Bengals go to Carolina and lose, and, you know, the one look at the standard box score would make someone say, oh, Andy Dalton had a rough one, 4 interceptions, 2 touchdowns, must have been a rough day for him. But in actuality, your guys' PFF deeper look showed that it actually was one of his better days, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He ended up finishing as the highest graded offensive player for the Bengals with a 90.4 overall grade. And look at the 4 interceptions, and you have to say at least 2 of them were not his fault. He obviously had batted balls that, you know, should have been incompletions, should have not been turnover-worthy plays. And then you have the 2 to Dante Jackson that are really in question. You know, Dante, you know, that one right now is graded as a non-turnover-worthy play, but it's under a impromptu senior analyst review, just because of after reviewing the tape, we might need a second opinion given whether or not John Ross was, you know, running a skinny post or it should have been more inside. But he really had a good game outside of, you know, kind of those 2 throws even. He played well under pressure, a lot of pressure as well. Corey Glenn did not have a good day. And Andy Dalton was not the reason for this loss. I think you have to look at the defense. Didn't get enough pressure on Cam and didn't, you know, allowed him to run the ball more than he wanted to. Allowed Christian McCaffrey to run the ball better than they liked. And it's that's where the blame has to shift, not Andy Dalton.
You mentioned Cordy Glenn. How bad were the numbers on him?
Pretty bad. He ended up being the offense's lowest graded player, and it's mostly because he suffered in pass protection. He ended up allowing 8 total pressures, which is 6 more than he allowed in the first 2 games combined. That is not going to help you from an overall grade standpoint. He really just got beat up and down. 7 hurries, 1 quarterback hit, and when your blindside protector is doing that, it's very hard for an offense to get going, and you know, that's something that he's going to need to bounce back from. You know, Cordy Glenn, more often than not, is a, you know, stalwart left tackle, but if, you know, performances like that can ruin drives and ruin offenses. And, you know, his guards didn't play well either. Clint Bowling, normally a standout guard, had allowed 2 pressures. Redmond allowed another two pressures. When you're allowing that many pressures in a game, it's really hard to get the offense flowing. And when you're going against Cam Newton and, you know, the Carolina Panthers offense, you're going to need to put points on the board. And with that many pressures, you know, a bad game from Cordy Glenn, all the factors kind of combined so that, you know, the Bengals come up short here.
So, what did you see on the Bengals defensive side of things? Now, obviously, Carolina runs up 230 yards on the ground and scores a bunch of points. Who were the individuals that had the lowest grades, and what were the other analytics that kind of told the story there?
Yeah, I think a big story coming out of this one is they're going to suffer with Glasgow's injury. He was having a career year, end up finishing this game with a 90.0 overall grade before going down and obviously being carted off the field, and now confirmed that he's out for the season. That's a big blow for their depth at the interior. Also, you know, Carlos Dunlap had a great game, specifically in the raw net, and recorded a few pressures of his own. Carl Lawson had a good game. And Geno Atkins continues to be just playing like a man possessed, as I called it on Twitter. He has 7 total pressures in this game. He leads the NFL at his position in total pressures with 19. Money well spent, Bengals. Very, very good decision on renewing him or extending his contract, because he is having a career year. And that's saying something for a guy that's had pretty much, you know, great years through, you know, all throughout his career. And this one is looking pretty special to start.
Yeah. Well, so a quick glance ahead at Atlanta. You know, their weapons on offense are obvious. I mean, and Calvin Ridley breaking out now has changed things. Defensively, they've had issues. How are teams taking advantage of them defensively? Who have been the primary perpetrators?
I think you take advantage of them defensively because they've had so many injuries. You just saw Ricardo Allen go down with a season-ending injury. Obviously, Keanu Neal is out. Deion Jones is out. This defense is taking hits left and right, specifically in the secondary. And you combine that with Brian Poole having a bad year. He's asked to play a lot in the slot. He had a season low overall grade against the Saints Sunday. And that's just not going to help things. You know, DeMonte Casey's playing well with San Diego State products, but there's not a lot of bodies left in this secondary that can really rally back for this, you know, for a defense that's in desperate need of secondary help. Yes, they have, you know, Desmond Trufant and Robert Alford has played well, but those safeties are taking hits. Deion Jones, their best coverage linebacker, is gone. Duke Riley can't fill his shoes. This offense is still going to need to put up a lot of points, a Patrick Mahomes level of points to stick with teams, even with the Bengals.
That will be a fun one to watch. I think you've got two offenses that know how to score and two defenses that haven't been very good at stopping anybody. 51-50 maybe is where we start. You know, the over-under is going to be a big old boy in this one if you're in Vegas. There's no doubt about that. Everything else that you can look forward to over at PFF? Obviously, Edge and Elite and all the information you guys have. What do you got going on?
Absolutely. You know, subscribing to our Elite subscription gets you access to our Greenline product, which gives you over-under spread picks and moneyline picks for every week. And specifically looking at the Falcons-Bengals game, I think there might be a good chance our Greenline analysts pick the over on this one, because I think if A.J. Green's healthy, John Ross can get back on his feet, this could be a very high-scoring game.
Yeah, we shall see. We shall see. And we'll be talking with you next week about it, what happened, and what all the real numbers say about what goes down in Atlanta. Thanks, Austin. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Paul. Have a good one.
All right. It is that time for three questions. So you know what that means, Fletcher. We're live.
It's my first time doing three questions.
It is your first time doing three questions. We had some questions for you on the Deuce last week.
That's true.
But not in the official three-question segment.
And it was more of an intro questions, you know, kind of.
Oh, don't worry. We'll get to that.
We got
to
dig down. We got to drill down.
No, I like when the three-question segment goes off the rails, personally.
Okay.
But we will focus on some Bengals stuff because you guys are – Twitters are – man, they had a day for themselves on Sunday. Bengals Twitter, they had everything. John Ross guy. Randy Bullock sucks guy.
AJ soft guy.
AJ soft guy. How many hospital balls do you have to catch and crazy plays, diving, giving up your body, do you have to make over the course of 8 seasons and only miss a small handful of games in order to not be called soft? Like, I just don't know how to respond to AJ Green, a soft guy.
That's a pretty small corner of the bar.
It really is. But all the guys had their moments on Sunday. So Bengals, that was one of those where it'd been a while since there was some real negative with an L that I sort of late night Sunday, rather than opening it back up and diving in, I sort of said, I'm going to let them sleep this one off. You know,
wise.
Just come back Monday and we'll start a new day tomorrow.
Collect the pieces.
I think we all need to wake up with a fresh brain.
Yeah,
I think is what we learned from that. All right, so three questions. And credit to you guys. I know you guys are strong. You did sleep it off. You took your Advil and drank your water, and you woke up. And now we've got some very quality, relevant questions. At M Wales, asking if Redmond is on a short leash. Alex Redmond, of course, won the guard job. That, you know, holding penalty was a absolute killer, which caused the 53-yard field. I mean, they were down inside the 20.
Yep.
That is this dude's DNA right now, is penalties when you don't need them. But outside of that, he's got a lot of upside. And they knew that was going to be the case with them, and it came to bite them at a bad time on Sunday.
He wasn't the lowest graded out offensive lineman.
Via PFF?
Via the PFF.
Yeah. Cordy Glenn was. Cordy Glenn did not have the best day over there on the left side. He'd been good to this point. There's a lot of stuff that goes into that. Definitely surprising. But as far as Redmond, Christian Westerman was active.
I was going to say the Hive.
The Hive. Engage. the Westerman Hive was out there. He didn't get in on offense, of course. He didn't even get in the competition in the preseason. So to think that he's all of a sudden going to take over for Alex Redmond in week four, I don't think is real.
As long as Billy Price is hurt, I don't think.
No, because Hopkins has got to play center.
So they're sort of in a box.
Yeah, he's the guy. And the only way that Westerman gets on the field right now is if Hopkins or Bowling gets hurt.
Right.
You're not going to see a benching of Alex Redmond. Not right now. My man Andy Billy Bobby wants to know why they're wearing the black jerseys in the heat.
It was humid down there in Charlotte.
You know why? Because the home team gets the pick. And they put you in the black jerseys. That's part of being the road team. They do that to you.
Yep.
They were in the all whites indoors in Indy, and then they were in the black jerseys against Baltimore. But that was a night game.
Even if that's only worth 1%, you know, Carolina's coaches are just fist pumping.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Coaches go bonkers over that stuff. Yes. Well, down there, they get it all the time.
Yeah.
Those teams like Tampa and Carolina and Miami, they love putting you northern teams in your black jerseys.
We should do a deep dive on this and
the history.
Look at the
black jerseys in the South.
Gamesmanship.
Yeah. Anyway, that's to answer that question. It's part of the deal. All right. So at Jeremy Deal, our man always asking us good questions, wants to know about your car situation because. Because Jim's Yaris was truly the stuff of legend, which Jim claims you could fit 2.5 Pat Sims into his Yaris, which is somehow still rolling. It'd be close, but he claims it was the size of the race. So we need to know about your car situation and if it's going to live up to the stuff of legend.
Well, it's kind of a thing in my household right now.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so I have a 2007 Nissan Pathfinder. Still rolling. It's only got 185,000 miles on it.
All right.
But once I got this job and be driving a little bit, so we're trying to figure out the sitch here in Cincinnati, where we want to live and whatnot, I've had some issues with the Pathfinder.
You're going to end up on the side of the road in northern Kentucky somewhere, aren't you?
Yeah, well, so I've had to change a lot of things. And not like transmission or I'm not having drivetrain issues. We're talking about sensors.
Oh, I hate sensors.
Cam sensors. Camshaft sensors.
Sensors will ruin everything.
They're like $300, yes. And you can't get them anywhere. The dealer has to. It's a thing. It's a money racket.
It is a money racket. But so, are you considering
No, well, here's
cashing in and just starting over with a new car.
No.
Giving up on your 185,000 miles
in. No, man, we're just hitting the stride in my opinion. So I come from a family where cars are taken to over the limit. You run these things out.
Mm-hmm.
And I come from a family that knows how to work on cars and fix things. So I'm hesitant to buy a new car, but I know I need to, and I've been getting a lot of backlash from my significant other, and now her mother's involved.
Uh-oh.
She sent me a text message yesterday saying, it's time. It's time to get a new car.
I think I might be on her team.
Well, here's another thing. This is something that I need to reveal. See,
people that come from a family of fix-the-car people are the people that end up on the side of the road in northern Kentucky wondering what this dude walking up on them is thinking.
That's true. Also, this is added evidence for my incompetence. I have a push mower, and I need to get a riding lawnmower, right? Save me a lot of time.
I still can't believe you have a push mower.
I have an acre of yard
to push my,
and I'm pushing it. That's how
you stay in such good shape.
I'm cheap. I just realized that.
Did you just figure that out? You might be cheap.
I have the means for luxury, and I'm deferring.
It's not even about luxury.
It's about reliability.
Pushing mowing is, that's just stupidity.
I told you, I came from a county.
Towns County thought process is problematic. Yeah, I am not calling that luxury. That is just, when you have an acre, like, you just shouldn't have a little push mower. That's part of the or you should just pay somebody.
No, that's not what we do.
Well, we'll see. We'll find out when you figure out where you're going to live. If you end up with an acre again, then
No. That's a one-time decision.
When you live down in Lexington, you gotta have some land. That's a sign of status down there.
It was hard to find,
but you found it.
But now we're looking for something a little bit more,
yeah,
city like.
Okay,
that's another thing we need to develop here on this podcast. Is like, I think we could have a couple offshoots of like, Paul shows me the city. Or Paul helps me make a real estate purchase.
Are you?
We could really make this a show.
Are you? What about Paul shows me Chili's? What if we go and do a live? I kind of want to do a live episode at Chili's.
It wasn't apostrophe S. I just want to make sure people know.
Yeah, I don't know if that was brought up enough, that it was brought up that you said that you love all Chili's.
I love all Chili's.
People thought that you just loved like their like the pita wraps and like
whatever else they're known for.
Yeah, you might have been.
It's not Applebee's.
I couldn't help it when we were in Carolina. There were Chili's everywhere.
Yeah.
And all I kept thinking of was like, Fletcher loves all of these. Loves all Chili's. I'm glad that's a thing. At some point, maybe we can get them on as a sponsor.
Yeah, I think
Since you have so much love, and you know, I feel like this could be a growing thing. Chili's sponsorship.
Well, we should have a third podcast for you now, since you're doing That So Cincinnati, which is off to a successful start and is very good.
Yeah, thank you.
Where you help me get around Cincinnati and
technically that's my fourth podcast.
Okay, it's your other.
If you count the walkout and the deuce, one technically it's a fourth. So you're saying a fifth
podcast.
A fifth podcast. Where? What do I do on this one?
You find me five choices where I could dwell.
Yeah.
For the next however long I'm working.
So that's
here.
Really episode one.
You pick
Paul
up.
Teaches Fletcher about Cincinnati real estate.
Yeah, and then we narrow it down, and then we make a decision. And
like HGTV. So people go through it with us and feel like they
That way you can show me different neighborhoods, maybe where you grew up.
Yeah.
I learn, but we also learn about you.
Oh, yeah, right. Maybe I could get you to buy my childhood home that had a beautiful apple tree in the front yard.
I'm going to cut that tree down.
That would be – Can I? I don't think I can fire you, but I could definitely suggest it to people that are above us.
Made the wrong decision.
If you cut down my childhood apple tree, I've actually had discussions with my wife about, like, it's apple season for me. Like, this is the time where we would pick off the tree and like make apple sauce and apple pies and like. It was bountiful, right? So she was like, "Do you want to get some apples or whatever?" And I was like, only thing I really want to do is go back to that house and knock on the door and ask if they mind if I pick some apples off their tree. I feel like that's something I should be able to do as a former owner that, well, I was not really an owner, but my parents owned me and they owned the house too.
And you like cultivated it.
Totally.
Helped develop it.
Absolutely. And I think they mostly did all that apple stuff because they thought it was cool that I would have that thing. But now I got nothing and you were going to cut it down.
That would be
That is truly the core of me right there. And you're like, I didn't knock it down.
I would send you a Snapchat as the tree was falling with some emojis.
Sad face emoji.
Sad face emoji.
Sad face emoji.
Here's maybe your applesauce.
Like, maybe like the moving gif of James Vanderbeek shaking his head at me or something.
Here's your applesauce. How do you like them apples?
Oh.
Yeah.
Matt Damon. You send me a Matt Damon gif?
Yep.
Wow. This really has turned for the worst, I feel. I feel like it's time to leave.
I think you're right.
All right, well, look out for the news later this week. Hopefully Fletcher doesn't try to cut to the core of my soul when we just talk about the Bengals and the Falcons as we preview that game. Optimistic Bobby's going to come back. We'll talk to him on Thursday, and then we'll have Tyler Eifert on Beyond the Stripes, so go on Cincinnati.com and watch that. But we'll also have audio of the hot seat and some other stuff from Eifert this week, so you can catch all of that on the Deuce. So hopefully we will talk to you then, and have a good one, everybody.